Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Well, here we are again. Apple announces a gadget and much of the world stops, falls in love, and at least promises to open its wallet. The highly anticipated, just unveiled iPhone 5 is officially the world's slimmest smartphone now, at 20% lighter than the previous model, and several updated features. Will it always be like this with Apple? Its product rollouts, part commercial zeitgeist party, part religious ritual? Perhaps not. And it's possible the iPhone 5 may have signaled something of a change in the way in which Apple approaches the world, at least its showmanship. But the overall growth of Apple as a retailer and an employer, both here in the U.S. and in China, is having a huge impact on employment regulations around the world and employee benefit programs here in the U.S. With us to talk about the future of Apple and its impact on everything from benefit programs to GDP in the United States is Ken Auletta, writer and media critic for The New Yorker. Welcome back to the program, Ken.
Thank you, John.
Describe for us how Apple has grown, not simply as a design company and as a high-tech company, but as a retailer with a huge workforce.
I mean, they are, as we know, the world's most valued company today, and a company that 10, 15 years ago was on, actually 10 years ago, was on the brink of bankruptcy. Steve Jobs comes back, and he just did this extraordinary job, and among the things he did that were really interesting. He was a brilliant marketer. Forget the technology gee whiz stuff that Apple does. He had this sense that you keep a secret and you create interest by keeping a secret. So he treated all his new products as if they were atomic bomb secrets. And he built up this enormous interest. And if you went to those Apple demonstrations when Steve Jobs unveiled the iPod or the iPhone or the iPad, people burst into applause. It was like a Mooney convention. It was just extraordinary. He built up this interest and this following, and it became an Apple product for people a status symbol. So part of their success was to create this mystique around Apple, and Steve Jobs' personality was central to that. And in addition, as your question suggests, if you go into PC Richards or any electronics store, you see all of these add-ons, these new industries that have been created to basically service Apple.
So how does this ripple through communities? Because there are Apple stores all over the United States, certainly all over the world, and there's this sort of hipster demographic of T-shirted workers in these Apple stores who interact with the consumers. I mean, in a sense, they have an army of influence that has a huge economic weight around the United States, both at the local level and nationally.
They deserve some credit for that. I mean, you go to those stores and the genius bars at the Apple stores, those youngsters in T-shirts are, in my experience, are really very well informed. And you have a question, and they have answers to it. So you walk into an Apple store, it's a tourist attraction. People go there not just to buy things, but to wander around and gaze at these at the things. It becomes a tourist attraction. And it's extraordinary. It's not just in New York, it's in any city. It's in China. And it's an extraordinary thing. And I think a lot of that has to do with just brilliant marketing. You know, one of the interesting things that has always stunned me about Apple, despite the fact that it's a cutting-edge digital company, if you look at where Steve Jobs did his advertising buys, it was on network television and newspapers.
Right.
So-called dying media, he put millions of dollars into advertising. And those ads were brilliant, and they reinforced the sense this is a cool thing to do, own an Apple product.
You know, I was at a conference on healthcare at the Mayo Clinic, of all places, over the weekend, and they were talking about the interest that's, you know, grown among people who are trying to sponsor or get involved in, you know, innovation in healthcare. And one of the conversation pieces was you know, Apple is suddenly really interested in this because they have this gigantic workforce that they want to develop sort of innovative streams in the healthcare field to deal with this huge workforce they suddenly have, which, you know, in a few years may rival Walmart's.
And they also are doing the same thing in terms of distance learning or online education. Apple is very aggressively trying to move into this other area, which they see as a growth area.
And do you think that that has impacts on healthcare policy in the United States, educational policy in the United States, as well as the other things we've known Apple to be transformative in American society?
Well, I don't see Apple alone in this. And in fact, in some ways in healthcare, Apple may even be behind. And Microsoft's been doing that for a longer period of time. And I think actually Microsoft started with the Mayo Clinic or the Cleveland Clinic. I'm confused. One of the two. But essentially the notion that in a digital world you can share all of your medical information, and it could be online in a cloud, which is what Apple and Microsoft and Amazon and Google are all moving towards. And the idea that doctors can share information about their patients easily, and you get multiple opinions easily. I mean, that's all. I mean, I just did an MRI. I'd love to share that with someone else, another doctor. You know, electronically, you'd be able to do that.
And, you know, in fact, the other thing that took place at this conference at Mayo was that presentation after presentation rolled out Apple products as demonstration platforms for doing precisely that. In the area of medical information sharing, as well as healthcare policy for, you know, large-scale employers, Apple is an innovator in both places.
No, Apple is a wonderfully innovative company. Yet one of the things that's really interesting, if you look at the headline in today's Wall Street Journal on the front page at the top, it's just a promo for a story inside. The headline says, "Is the iPhone getting boring?" There's a natural tendency in the press to judge Apple, you know, in a different way, to hold it to a different standard. So when they come out with the iPhone 5, as they did yesterday, the question is it really as revolutionary as the original iPhone or the original iPad? And if it's deemed that it's not, as yesterday was not deemed to be revolutionary, they made changes, but they weren't revolutionary changes, then you get some snickering, which is, you know, that doesn't happen to a lot of other companies. So Apple benefits from the mystique they've created, but they're also, I think, now running, particularly in the post Steve Jobs era, they're running into a buzzsaw of skepticism.
A mystique problem, a problem that a lot of companies would love to have. Ken Letta, thanks so much.
My pleasure, John.
Ken Letta on Apple. He's a writer and media critic for The New Yorker.